10 minutes, Shmuel Shapira.
At the end of his life, of Shmuel, when he couldn't go to shul every day, of course, his son of Shimon used to, right away when they were dancing after davening, used to go to the house and dance a little bit with his father, and he used to get Namash livelihood from that, the dancing that he did with him. At the end of his life, the last of the years, when he couldn't go alone, so he couldn't move alone around, so they had bells. In those days, they didn't have a, like about 30 years ago, they didn't have like a thing to press like that someone will come. So they had a bell that rang. When he wanted to get up, but Chatzais used to bring the bell, and he pulled a string and it rang in the other room, and his grandson who was sleeping there got up and helped him wash his hands, and then he used to do the Chatzais. And when he finished, he used to ring the bell again, the grandson used to come and help him lay down again to go back to sleep. Shmuel, that's very, he was very appreciated to the grandson each time, whoever it was that helped him. His grandson, Rabbi Yosef Fang, said that many nights he used to do this, and Shmuel, every night that he used to do it, he said, "Thank you so much, thank you so much." As if it's the first time he's helping him. Once he asked a Rav, someone, to come and help him go to shul for mincha when he was sick already. And he came late. So Shmuel started going slowly down the stairs. He was a sick person, he could fall down. And suddenly this Rav comes. "Shmuel, you waited for me? For you, I did? I waited for Mashiach." He took him to shul. Mamash, in his last days, Rabbi Shua Ben Rubinstein asked to take him to right before Pesach to Birkat Ha'ilanot, the blessing of the trees. Right? Maybe once a year. Shmuel didn't know if he should do that, maybe it's too hard for me to go, it's right there. He couldn't even flip over in the bed, he could get the compulsions again and stuff. But then he really wanted, and he said, "Shmuel, take me. So, Yeshua, take me. Shabel, take me to the field, to the tree." So he started taking him down. But he was suffering so much that Shabel wanted, "No, let's go back. I see you can't do it." Shmuel insisted, "No, we started, we have to go there." It took him a long, long time until he got there. And he blessed, and he came back. He was exhausted, right? But for the few weeks he lived afterwards, every time he saw the Shul, he said, "Thank you so much for taking me to the field." For 76 years, he fought against the Yetzer Hara. Every day, he was a general in the field of the battlefield. 3 weeks before he passed away, his grandson of Shimon Tzvi Shapira got married, and the Sharabach was in Shmuel's house. But of Shmuel, he didn't agree to sit in the front. He sat on the other side. But since he chose to sit there, every time people walked by, they hit the chair and it caused them a terrible pain. But why did he do that? Because he wanted to sit with his back to the door. Maybe women are going to come. This guy is 76 years old. He's sick. He's almost dead. Now, maybe women are going to come. I'm going to sit with my back to the door. Even though every time, they walk by. Oh, did I read to you the story of him going to Miro? Ah, maybe it's not him going to Miro. Ah, yeah. This I didn't read to you. I read to you the first time it was Meron. Now, this is a story that the second time. He went twice to Meron.
This whole life?
Yeah. He died in 1989. There wasn't much opportunity to go to Meron. Not to Meron.
Uman.
To Uman. Meron, he was all life. His whole life was in Meron. So he went Uman. Stop.
First time was in 71, right?
71 it was? I don't remember. You tell me, I don't know.
71, 72.
That's when he went.
Because it took him 6 months to get a green card and a visa from the United States. It was like almost a year. Then he had to go to London and wait weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah, 71. So the big trip. 1917. The Russians became a
communist.
The countries all got together.
Bolshevik revolution. October.
Yeah. Lenin with the red army. The reds against the whites, right?
Right.
Yeah. And Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of the British, the UK, he called it the Iron Fence, the Iron Gates. It says it like
the this. Iron Curtain.
Iron Curtain. He called it like that. Since then, everyone called it like that. Because they, for some reason, they put an iron curtain that no one can go in, no one can go out. Very hard. Until 1980, until 1990, that everything...
Berlin fell, actually 25 years ago.
Yeah.
This week.
What year was that?
89.
But the problem, okay, what do we care about this history? That from 1917, in a little town called Uman, 90,000 people live there. There was nothing there besides Tzion of Abenu, and that's what every breast of a chassid is yearning for. Yeah, so from that year, 1917, you couldn't go. But since the Bolshevik government, whatever it's called there, was Rakuv, how do you say Rakuv? So you were able to get in. If you knew the right holes, how to get in, you were able to get in there also. Who was the first one who went from the Breslovers? Shmuel Horvitz, before the Second World War even. And Tzvi Ali Rosenfeld used to go also after the war. And who's the biggest one who broke the walls over there? Eliezer Berlin, Shlita. He's the biggest one that breaking the opening the ways to Uman. Later in the years, at the end, like in the 80s, when Khorachov and Bozhenayov were the presidents or whatever they're called, yeah? It was easier to get in.
Gorbachev?
Khorachov, I don't know.
Jews living in Uman the whole time?
Of course. There's still Jews living in Uman today.
What?
There's still Jews, Russian Jews, not Israeli Jews.
I know, but there were Russian Jews back in 1917, too, right?
Yeah. There are millions.
No, living in Uman.
Yeah, in Uman. There's a cemetery in Uman. I went there this time. I went over there with graves, Jewish graves from all the years. There's a huge cemetery there which was destroyed completely in the Second World War. Completely. You walk, it's a huge field. For a few hundred years, they buried Jews over there in Uman. And there's nothing. It's just broken pieces of graves. And there's in one place, there's a stone that says, here are buried 3,000 people from a massacre or something. And then next to that, there's a Jewish cemetery that works today. And they have they build a new base, a stadium, and a tower with a new tower. And the Russian Jews, for some reason, also here in Israel, they put their images of the faces of people who died on the thing. It's usually black also. You saw that?
Yeah.
Interesting. don't know why. So I've been, I store old graves with I store all the names, I read Russian. So I store all Jewish names, Abramovich, and Jewish names, Jewish Ashkenazi names. Some of them also has Hebrew writing on them, you know. 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, all the years, 1980s, always Jews there. There's always someone dealing with the dead, so there, I guess there was Judaism there somewhat. But Michal Dorfman lived in there many, many years, during the communists, after the war. Abbasin's Rebbe, till he made Aliyah.
It was very, very tough.
Very tough, very tough. So we'll stop here and we'll tell you about this trip tomorrow.